Speaker meeting night. We got a great speaker for you tonight, Wiley from the Bayside Sharing Group out of Virginia Beach. Please welcome Wiley.
Good evening. My name's Wiley Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. Talking to Carlos on the way over here, usually when I'm asked to speak a couple of days in advance, I start thinking about what I want to talk about, but I've had 2 4-year-olds in my house for the last week, and I'm just fried right now. and that's one of the benefits of my sobriety, to have grandchildren that want to come see us. I started out in this fellowship. My dad was in AA. I grew up in a home with active alcoholism. When my dad started getting sober, he's like, okay, if you're in this family, his sponsor told him that if you want me to sponsor you, that if you have a wife, she will go to Al-Anon. If you have kids, they will go to Alateen. And if you don't want to go by those rules, you can find yourself another sponsor. They treated this as a family disease, that my drinking has affected those around me, whether I want to believe that or not. And it's my responsibility to help the family in recovery as well. So, my exposure to this program, I was 12, 13 years old, I would say. My dad had gotten sober. He decided he wanted to buy a boat, and he was determined he was going fishing. And it was March, and we went to Oregon Inlet. We about froze to death down there. But coming back, we went to an AA meeting in down on the Outer Banks. They had one down there on Saturday. I don't know if that meeting is still going or not, but it was an eating meeting. I was raised Southern Baptist everywhere we went. You know, I came from a family with 8 kids. If there was a free meal, we were there. My dad was a Navy chief. And I was just used to going these eating meetings. And that was my first AA meeting down there. And it was at a church. And I remember thinking that this guy was talking. He was talking about stuff I'd never heard a pastor talk about. And I was like, when I wanted to laugh, nobody laughed. And when this other guy said other stuff, everybody in the room laughed. The room was full of smoke. Back then, everybody was smoking in AA meetings, and that was my first exposure to an AA meeting. I had no idea what was going on. Me growing up, my drinking was whatever we stole out of the cabinet at the house. The fella that lived across the street from us, he had one refrigerator in the garage that was always stocked with Falstaff. And it was a kid's job to keep this thing stocked. And we would always, you know, steal a six pack or something and run out in the woods. And that was, you know, our rewards for keeping his refrigerator stocked. And early on, I probably was more interested in drugs at that point in time in my life than I was in alcohol. Later, as things went on, I found that I got a better release with drinking alcohol than I did with drugs. And I always had a battle. I always had this fighting battle in me that alcohol was creating a problem in my life. Well, I'll quit the alcohol, I'll go to the drugs. And drugs is creating a problem in my life, and it was back to the alcohol. It was always something else besides me. that was creating these issues. There was a couple of friends that I had met in Alatine, and they were my best drinking buddies. And, you know, they came from that environment. We just felt comfortable in that environment. I'll say for a couple of years there, we didn't do a whole lot of good for the reputation of Alatine the way we were coming to meetings. I remember just for me, the drinking was finally giving that release. I was always that shy little kid in the junior high dance who was leaning against the wall that wanted so badly to be out on a floor, but deathly afraid that somebody would ask me to go. You know, and that was kind of how my whole life was. I never felt real comfortable in my skin. Insecurity, but yet at the same time, I've always been outgoing, but I've always felt like a shy little boy. Alcohol was something that took that away from me. I felt like I belonged and I fit in when we were drinking. I never drank with people my own age. I'll explain a little bit more about that in a little bit. Everybody I hung out with was always older than me. When we were out drinking, it would stay in the parking lot at Giant Open Air Market at 1 o'clock in the morning with enough money and ask somebody to go in and buy us another case because we weren't old enough to go buy it ourselves. And there was always somebody along the line that was willing to help us out. You know, give them a couple of bucks to bring it out there. And that would carry us through the rest of the evening. My drinking was relatively short-lived. And I drank to blackouts. I was never a social drinker. I had a brother that was working at the emergency room down at Norfolk General, putting himself through college at the time. And we would end up down at his place, usually on weekend nights, and he didn't get off till midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. And I would remember going down to pick him up, but I most of the time did not remember how I got home. I wasn't even old enough. I wasn't licensed to drive at that point in my life. I had a couple of friends, and I don't talk a whole lot about my drinking. I fought always with, there was something wrong with whatever I was doing in my life. If I was drinking, I was trying to quit. I tried to get sober through the church. You know, I knew being an Alatine, part of that guilt, you know, here I am, my dad's trying to get sober. I'm trying to figure out what's going on with me and how this affected my life. And realizing that, you know, coming in here drunk and high all the time is probably not the best thing. So I had a lot of guilt over that as well. And my buddies and I would, a lot of times, we'd go out and get high before meetings. One of the guys that eventually ended up being one of my AA sponsors was one of my Alatine sponsors at the time. And one of the three guys that we all kind of hung out together, Dennis ended up getting sober in AA. And when he did that, it was like, I don't want to hang around this guy anymore. You know, he's talking different. You know, he's not part of the group anymore. And a little bit later, Tony got sober, and they were my two good drinking buddies. And a fellow that is still my brother-in-law today. We were pretty good drinking buddies there for a lot of years. And I remember just one night I something had happened at church. We were there, and I had been trying to get sober through the church. And we were driving down Shore Drive. I'm hugging a bottle of wine, wondering how I got drunk again. And it was just, everything I did with my drinking at this point was involved guilt. And it was always going to blackout. I'd gone to, my sobriety kind of started on a course. I had gone to an Alateen conference up in Maryland. And I talk a lot about that. I was very involved in it. Because of my exposure to this program early, I kind of feel that that gave me an early exposure to alcoholism and other aspects of what I could do with it. I'd gone to this conference. Dennis had gotten sober, and we talked on the way up there, and I knew I was having a problem with drinking. My drinking was not like the other people that I was hanging out with. And we talked on the bus on the way up, and I got high at the conference. I wasn't supposed to, and realized it's like, I've got to do something different with my life. And I had met this girl at this conference, and I was like, you know, she's kind of cute, and I've try to track her down later this summer. And I decided I was gonna go up to Roanoke for a visit. We had written a couple of letters back and forth, and I just got a backpack together, threw a bunch of stuff in there, and went down and bought a bus ticket, and away I went to Roanoke. And I got up to Roanoke, and she was in Europe somewhere. my best laid plans. I hung out with some of the other kids I had met in Alateen and hang out with them at night during the day, and at night I would usually hike up to the top of some mountain and sleep up there. And one night I found these guys at a campsite and ended up getting drunk there with them. Kate had come back from Europe, and their parents had invited me over for dinner one night. And after dinner, her dad said, why don't you go on in that room over there and have a seat? I'll be in a minute. And I found out later that Kate, when that was the room he always 12-step people in when he brought them home to his house. And Bud talked to me for a couple hours that night. And the one thing I remember out of that whole conversation was, if you're doing something in your life and you think that there might be something wrong with it, you better take a second look at it, because it's probably against your grain. And that was in September. And I didn't get to AA until March the following year. But that seed had been planted. You know, he talked to me about his drinking, talked to me about his recovery, about his family. And I still I just wasn't ready. And that was in 1973. And my last drunk was a Christmas Eve, 1973. I don't even remember coming home the next morning. I came from a family with 8 kids, and it was always a big deal on Christmas. Everybody, you know, waiting to go into the living room where all the presents were and everything else. And just so hungover, I couldn't see straight. My parents at this time, I know they, I always say probably the hardest thing my parents had to do was love me enough to let me hit my bottle. You know, they did not enable me in my drinking. I would at Christmas Eve. I that was my last drunk. I remember New Year's Eve. We tried to get drunk. I had strep throat real bad, and I just couldn't drink. It hurt so bad. I tried, but it was just my throat was on fire already, and alcohol and that strep throat weren't going real well. I had been doing a little bit of drinking on and off, but I, like I said, it was my last serious drunk was Christmas Eve. And I was still in high school. I was in a wood shop, and some guy had come from a construction company and wanted to hire some of the kids to do some odds and ends jobs on construction sites. So I was one of the ones that got hired. I was hired by this gentleman on a Wednesday. And I went to my friend Tony had gotten sober, and there was an intergroup meeting. And at that time I was doing some speaking for Alateen and schools and churches and things like this. And he says, why don't you come on to intergroup? You can tell them what you're doing. And I was like, okay. So we went down to the intergroup meeting, and after that was over, Tony says, like, I'm going to go to Catholic Mass on the way home. He said, you can come with me if you want. You know, he says, I don't have time to take you home. I was raised Southern Baptist. I figured, what the heck, I'll give it a shot, see what it's all about. And I still, to this day, I'm confused at a Catholic Mass. After the church service was over, he said, there's an AA meeting here tonight. He says, I need to go set tables up and get coffee going. He said, if you want to go over and give me a hand, I'll give you a ride home after that. He said, you know, I just need a hand. So I got over there. I was like, sure, I'll help you. So we're in there setting up tables. We had a coffee pot going, and people are coming in the door. And Tony's like, I don't have time to take you home. He said, if you'd like to stay for the meeting, you can, or you can hitchhike home and I'll see you tomorrow. And my friend Dennis and his fiance were going to be at that meeting that night. And it was an open AA meeting. It was a big book study group. I had always heard about this big book, but didn't know anything about it. And the gentleman that had hired me the Wednesday prior to that happened to be chairing the meeting that night. So the first AA meeting I go to, my boss is now chairing the meeting. I was not there to pick up a white chip that night. I was not there to quit drinking. They read through the book. They went around the room talking. And at the end of it, the guy looked at me and says, do you have anything you'd like to say? And I could have sworn that Tony told everybody in that room everything we had talked about. And everybody in that room was talking directly to me that night. And at that point, I knew I had every characteristic of an alcoholic, as I heard everything about me through those people in that room that night. That was on March 10th, 1974. And I haven't found it necessary to pick up drinks since. I was 17 years old, hadn't even turned 18. I got sober before I legally got old enough to buy beer. I was very fortunate because I had been placed around this program. I did not go to my first Alateen meeting willingly. My dad picked me up by the seat of my pants and threw me through the door, basically. And that started my process of recovery. When I would go into work, it was usually after school and on weekends, and I would go in. If it was raining on a construction site, generally they didn't work. Saul would say, everybody else go home. Wiley, you go get my Jeep. We got some things we have to go do. and he would drive me around to job sites all over the city and talk AA to me. I had people that just took me under their wing because I didn't have a clue. I knew I didn't want to keep going the way I was going. I grew up watching active alcoholism in the house. I saw the characteristics in me, and I knew where I was headed. I had a fight in me for the first 90 days of sobriety, like, I do not belong here. This is not for me. I didn't hurt bad enough. Back then, most people were coming to meetings, and most of them had three-piece suits on. They were all in their 60s and 70s. That's really old, Carlos. But I'm a snotty-nosed kid with a t-shirt on and cut-off shorts. And, you know, I did not fit the mold for what was in AA at the time. But we had a handful of people that took us under their wing. And I am just grateful I didn't have to, as it says in the first step in the 12 and 12, I was spared that last 10 or 15 years of literal hell. You know, I did not have to keep going down. I was told at times, you know, you haven't suffered enough. You know, for me, I had. I was hearing speakers in meetings talking about losing families, losing jobs, losing money, losing cars. And I'm trying to relate to all that stuff. I had never had any of that stuff to lose. I never heard them talk about what was going on in here. I have lost my soul. And that's what alcohol was doing for me. 2 years into sobriety, I was still suicidal. I was driving a truck at a time, and at the time, and I remember just thinking I could drive that thing through the rail of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel and just dump into the water. And somehow or another in my mind, I always got out. I remember finally one day sitting down to my sponsor and getting honest about that and talking. And it was like, you know, you don't, it's not that you want to kill yourself. You don't want to hurt anymore. And I hadn't gotten to the point of wanting to do an inventory. And I was like getting ready to start, and everybody's like, you know, if I'm having problems on a step that I'm on, it's usually the previous problem, the previous step I'm having a problem with. It's not the one I'm on. I had this concept of God that I had been pushed into my head by church, and I am grateful for the religious education I got growing up going to church. I don't think I didn't hear maybe what they were saying. It's what I heard and my perception of what they were saying of the fire and damnation. And that was my idea of God. And that was something that really had to shift in me early in sobriety. And I had to find a new way of getting comfortable with the God of my understanding. I had a few spiritual experiences that I'll say that I could no longer deny that there was something out there that was greater than me that I had an experience with that was not associated with what I had been told in church. It was finally something personal to me, not something I was told I had to believe in. And that was the beginning of my recovery in this program. coming to believe in a God of my own understanding, not riding on somebody's coattails because what they talked about their God sounded really good. I went to a lot of meetings for the first couple of years riding on people's coattails. And I could, like a parrot, repeat things I said. Remember one of my sponsors said, just fake it till you make it. You know, it just keep coming back to meetings and eventually that miracle will happen. I'd like to talk more today about the sobriety and the life that sobriety has given me. And how did I get there? Service work. And when I first got my first home group, a couple of meetings in, they're like, you know, at the end of the meeting, you can clean the ashtrays, because everybody was smoking then. And I felt like I was part of something because I got to clean the ashtrays. And after a month or so of that, you know what? You can clean the coffee pot after the meeting. Did that for a little while. You know what? You can come in early next week and you can make the coffee. You got to get here 45 minutes before the meeting. I wasn't coming in the door and walking out. And those little things made me feel part of something. And I really believe that's what kept me coming back to AA early on, is feeling a part of something. I've done multiple different things in service work, and people hear about working with others. You know, working with new drunks, being a GSR, being an intergroup rep. You know, every week we come to an AA meeting and the chairs are set up. We come in, the coffee pot's on. The end of the meeting, things are cleaned up and put away. If they weren't, the church wouldn't allow us to be here. These are all parts of service work. Some people are really good at working with a new drunk. And that doesn't always work for all of us. Be willingness to try. Early on, get involved. Ask, what can I do to help? Make yourself feel part of something. Get a home group. Get involved with that home group. Because when my home group, when I was having a bad day, the people in my group knew me well enough to call me on it. And that's what was vital for me early on. And I made it a point every week, if nothing else, I made my home group meeting. Those were commitments I had to make for my sobriety early on. One of the biggest joys of my life, I was able and asked to sponsor an Alateen group after I got sober for a few years. And for me, that just seemed to be a natural fit working with the kids. And I spent about 16 years sponsoring Alateen groups. And it was just something that felt very right for me. My daughter that is with us this week was a member of the Alateen group. I knew her before I knew her mother. For years, she called me dad. She called her dad Pops. That is one of the gifts of sobriety for me today. I met Jessica, we became pretty close in the group, talking. I eventually met her mother. They were talking about going through a divorce, and I'm like, I have got to stay away from this woman. But we knew each other for about 4 years. that was a part of my life that AA helped me get together. You know, early on, if I had a second date with somebody, you thought about taking a U-Haul truck with you, you know? It's time to move in. I had to get my sex life together. I had to get myself emotionally stable and figure out what to do with my life. Because if I went took all that crap into a relationship, it was just going to destroy it like the one I'd just come out of. My first marriage lasted 16 years, and I just, for me, I knew it was time to get out of that marriage. And the sponsor I had at the time, we spent a lot of time talking, and for me, emotionally, I think, and spiritually, that experience was probably some of the roughest, darkest times I've had in sobriety. Because I knew that if I didn't change, I was still going to carry this, my emotional baggage, into the next relationship I ever got into. I had a group of five of us that used to sail together, and it was like probably two weekends out of the month, we were off on a sailing trip somewhere. It was a four-day weekend, we were gone somewhere. And we had some of the best AA meetings on the deck of that boat. Nothing formal, but all of us talking about our sobriety, our lives, our spiritual growth. And that's where I met my sponsor for many years. John was my sponsor. Going through one of the really toughest, darkest times of my sobriety, John gave me a project. He said, you need to go home. He says, and you get a 12 and 12. He said, and every night, he said, I want you to read one step all the way through in the 12 and 12. The next night, read the next step. He said, and that's all I want you to do, just one step a night. And do that, go through the 12 and 12, get all 12. He says, then I want you to do it two more times. He said, but if you miss one night, you got to start all over again. And I'm thinking, okay, so that's 36 days. I know in 3 months from now, I'm going to feel different than what I feel right now. The first time it was just get through the 12 and 12 as quick as I could. The second time, things slowed down, and I'm reading things. The third time I went through it, I'm like, how did I ever miss that line? Why did I not know that? Where I slowed down enough to really understand what was being said in that book. I look back at how that book was written, how the big book was written, and this program, it's just so divinely inspired. Well, the first 100 people got together and knew they had to put that story down in print. And it hasn't changed since. And what AA is all over the world today. My dad in sobriety, one of the things he did, once he retired from the Navy, after 30 years, he went back, got a degree in special education, and was teaching school. And my aunt was over in Africa, and asked him if he would come over there and be a principal of the American school. And I got a chance to go over and visit for about 6 weeks while they were there. We were in Kenya. They live right outside of Nairobi. And that was in 1977. And there was two meetings, I think, in the whole country at the time. And while I was there, they started a third. And one of the guys in the meeting was coming up on a year in sobriety. He'd worked for the power company, And they said, we need you to go out to, there was a new dam that had built, and they wanted him to go out there and do something with that project. And he was so, I remember him coming into the meeting, and he was so deathly afraid of having to leave his AA group and go out there by himself. And he was contemplating whether he was going to have to quit the job and to be able to stay there. And I watched that guy over 3 weeks while we were there. And the first night, talking about the fear of having to leave his AA group and his support. In the third week, he came in and he said, I know now why I'm going out there. And it is not to have this job with the power company. He says, my job is to take my big book and go out there and start another meeting. And I just remember watching this thing happen in that miracle of that transformation in this gentleman. AA went from three meetings. That was a fourth. My dad was in Kenya for 2 years, and there was about six or seven meetings. My mom started an Al-Anon group. My sister was over there and started an Alateen group. If somebody got sober in the country, everybody knew about it. Like, we have a new member back over at this from this tribe out in the middle of nowhere. And I got a little bit of a sense of what it must have been like in Akron after that first meeting was started. When they moved out and started that next group, we have another member, and everybody in AA knew about it. And just being able to experience that miracle of what AA has accomplished in so many lives around the world, that was just a true joy for me. And on the way back through, when I left there, we went to London, walked into the World Service office in London, and we were getting literature together to send back for the Alateen groups there. And to just be a part of that. And there was a Catholic priest there that had started a rehab center. And he had translated the book into Swahili, the big book into Swahili. And he wanted to print the big book in Swahili and let the proceeds fund his recovery center. And he finally realized that this is a copyrighted thing, he can't do it. When my dad came back from Africa, he brought back a copy of the big book that had been translated into Swahili, carried it to World Service. They had somebody on staff that was fluent in Swahili, and that was the 13th language the big book was printed in. Again, that miracle of AA working and how it works. My daughter grew up with eight kids in the family. I was just always the uncle that wound all the kids up. In my life, I was never physically able to have children. In my first marriage, I adopted my daughter, my wife's daughter from her first marriage. And that was a true joy to me, to be able to have my own kids. She and her husband decided they weren't going to have children. My current wife, her daughter, which I met in Alateen, they now have a set of twins that are 4 years old. We were asked to come up and help when the babies were born. They were premature. And that was during COVID. So we carried our camper up Northern Virginia. It was about 15 minutes from our house. We found a campsite. And every other night, two of us would go to the camper and sleep. And the other two had the kids all night long because they were on 2 hour feeding cycles. And the fact that we were able and the kids trusted us enough to come up and take care of a 4-pound little baby girl. The first time I touched that little girl, I thought, I will break her. She was so small. And again, the joys of sobriety, the trust that the kids had in us today. This past year, her father passed away while he was in the hospital. Cancer, through that treatment, through the hospice care, the round-the-clock care, him passing, setting up. We had company in the house for 3 months. Her husband, my wife's ex-husband, was in our house all the time. Anytime we had a group of people together, he was there. Their marriage didn't work out, but they were still friends. And again, that goes straight back to sobriety. That all the mess going on in my life that I brought in this door when I walked in here and picked up my white chip. I don't have to keep living my life that way. I can change. That doesn't mean everything's going to be all peachy, cream, and rosy. But if I keep working at it, I, as a person, can change. And that is the freedom of this 12 steps. It's not about not drinking. When I got here, that's all I could think about, was not drinking. That is just the beginning of sobriety. It gave me a direction that I could change my life a day at a time. And every time I think I got something under control, something else will pop up that I need to start working on. Can I go home tonight and treat, when I go through that front door, close the front door, can I treat people at home the way I treat people in this meeting tonight? That's a question I have to ask myself. And when I can't, I don't like making amends. They don't come easy for me. But that's part of my sobriety. That's part of my recovery. Little things that I found that I had to do early on. One of the things my sponsor told me to do early on, he said, when you go to the grocery store and you get out of your car, if you see a shopping cart in a parking lot, pick it up and take it in. And to this day, I still do that. That's part of my recovery. It reminds me that this is part of my spiritual growth. It keeps me centered. And on days when it's cold, windy, and rainy, and there's a cart way out in the middle somewhere, I really don't want to go do that. But when I do it and start heading for the store, it's like, okay, God, thank you. And those are the little things that have helped me through my life a day at a time. I've got kids that absolutely love me today, which is just amazing. I've got grandkids that can't wait to come visit. And that is just, this is the first Christmas we've had the kids in our house, because they just, the way things, one of them's in the military and he's always been gone somewhere, and the other two are, you know, tied into their house up in Northern Virginia. But to have them come and stay with us, I'm tired. But it is such a good feeling, and such a joy of sobriety, and to make the friends I've made in sobriety around different parts of the country, different parts of the world. The adventures that AA has allowed me to go on in sobriety have just been amazing. Meetings, every country I've ever gone to, there's an AA meeting somewhere. Going to AA meetings where three different languages were spoken in the same group, not understanding the words, but knew exactly what the person was talking about. You know, they talk about that language of the heart. You know, and to experience that was just a joy. So today, a day at a time, I don't pick up a drink. I try to do what I can to help other people around me. I try to help out my home group. And when I'm asked to talk, I do it, because this is about my recovery. This is about me. When I sit down, if I can take a deep breath and relax, I know I've been honest with you guys. I'm not up here just spouting a bunch of BS. And what AA has to offer, if you want it a day at a time, number one is don't pick up a drink. Just don't pick up a drink. And if you feel like you need to, pick up the phone and call somebody first. So a day at a time, we make it. We make our friends in this program. We have our families come back to us in this program. And the gentleman at 12-step me, before I got to AA, his wife and I stayed friends for years. A week and a half ago, she passed away at 101. She was blind. She would go on Zoom meetings and listen for Al-Anon. She's still 12-step people in Al-Anon. They brought meetings into her home once a week in Al-Anon. This lady was sharp as a tack mentally. And I look at that and I was like, if I could just be so lucky. So I think that's my cue. I was supposed to stop 3 minutes ago. But to have people like that in those friendships and in recovery, that's been a reward of not picking up a drink a day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out, Wally. That was a great message. I have to tell you that.